Good morning. You're listening to the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm.
Good morning. I'm J. Marie Schaefer.
Good morning. I'm Kim Hance.
And welcome to the Herzog Law Firm Estate and Medicaid Planning Show, where we talk about estate planning, wills, trusts, Medicaid, home care, and all kinds of things related to that. We welcome your questions. This is a call-in show, so if you have any questions, please give us a call at 518-476-5900 or toll-free at 1-800-WROW-590. And this morning, we have a special guest joining us, Erica. I don't want to butcher your last name.
Salamita.
Salamita, thank you. I should have asked you that first.
No, it's okay.
The Director of Education and Outreach from the Alzheimer's Association of Northeastern New York. Welcome, Erica.
Thank you. Thank you for having me today. Pleasure to be here.
So, Erica, let's start by telling us a little. I'm sure a lot of people know what the Alzheimer's Association is, but everyone has some different ideas about what it does. Does it just do research? Does it just do support groups? So kind of give us an overview of what the Alzheimer's Association does.
Yeah. So the Alzheimer's Association is a national organization. We are across the country. It's the leading voluntary health organization in Alzheimer's care, support, and research. So we don't only do research. We don't only do care and support. We do a little bit of everything. Our mission is really to eliminate Alzheimer's disease through the advancement of science and to help people with care and support and also reduce the risk of dementia by promoting brain health, which is something that we've been very big on trying to promote that over the last couple years. Our local chapter, the Northeastern New York chapter, we're located right here in Albany. We cover the 17 surrounding counties. So we go all the way north up to Plattsburgh and the Canadian border. We go south down into Columbia and Greene counties and then out west into the Leatherstocking region and everywhere in between. So it's a large territory. We have six other chapters in New York State that cover the rest of the state. So big territory that we cover.
That is a large territory. And if people want to find out more about you, can you give out your phone number and the website?
Sure. Best thing that they can do is go to ALZ.org. You can click on your specific chapter. So just click on the state of New York. All six chapters will pop up and you can click Northeastern New York. Or you can always call our 24-hour-a-day, 7-day-a-week helpline. And that number is 1-800-272-3900. That is a 24-hour-a-day, 7-day-a-week helpline. So whether you're just seeking information out about your specific chapter of the Alzheimer's Association, whether you're a caregiver who maybe is just starting out on this journey and has some questions related to services and the disease process and what treatments are available, if there's an elder law attorney in the area to get some other planning done, anything Alzheimer's and dementia related, whether it pertains to the disease or to a service, can be answered through that helpline there.
Yeah, that's great. Thank you.
You're welcome.
And Kim, as we go out and talk to people about getting home care, I mean, a lot of the clients we see have parents who have Alzheimer's or dementia.
Right. That was one of the big things. So this past Tuesday, we spent the day with the association down at the Capitol. It was our legislative advocacy day, and I think today was, or this year was, our biggest year ever. We had over 200 advocates, I think, lobbying for different things. I don't think what people realize is the state of New York is the leading state in the U.S. For Alzheimer's support programming. So we're very lucky. We're very progressive. We're kind of leading the way as far as all of the different programs we have available to families. Erica, you want to touch on some of the specific programs that we in New York kind of spotlight as far as, you know, that really aren't available anywhere else?
Yeah. So it's kind of interesting because we think of our state in a variety of ways and everybody has their own feelings, but this is one way where New York State is really leading the way. And we do have other states that really do want to model our Alzheimer's Caregiver Support Initiative. So a few years ago, the governor set an unprecedented amount of funding into Alzheimer's care and support to be handed out in various kind of buckets and various programs throughout the state. At the Alzheimer's Association, a lot of the work that we do is funded by the ALZCAP program, which again comes from one of these buckets of state funding. Through that program, our staff are able to go out there into those 17 counties, and deliver all of our services. So care consultations, when a family calls us and they're starting out on this journey and they need to talk about putting a plan of care in place, getting connected with services, thinking about the future. If they want to keep their loved one at home, what are they going to need to do? Getting educated about this disease that has now come into their life. So we offer those care consultations as one of those services. We're proud to say that we offer them at several points of service out in those counties. So while we have one main office in Albany, we have several points of service where we can meet families at locally in their county so they don't have to travel too far. We have support groups. That's another service that is funded by this ALSCAP grant. So just like any other support group, it's a safe place for people to come and share their experiences, get some stuff off their chest, hear from other caregivers that are really going through the same thing. And it's also a great place to learn from other people and just share experiences. Generally speaking, there's always a caregiver in the group that says, you know what, that's happened to me and this is what I've done to kind of help that. So that's a great resource. Another service that the program funds is our education programs. So across our 17 counties, we offer both live, in-person, and online education programs. So our program managers are out there doing all sorts of education, what we would call awareness programs. So the fact of the matter is, even though more people are aware now, we're still not making a dent in this crisis that we have on our hands. We need to make more people aware of the warning signs and aware of what to do once they recognize those warning signs. So we offer awareness programs like knowing the 10 warning signs, healthy habits, which is about healthy living and things that you can do in the areas of exercise, diet, etc., to promote overall healthy aging, and programs like that. We have another set of programs that are more caregiver education programs. So now they're in this, and maybe they need help with how to communicate a little bit better with their loved one throughout the illness as those communication challenges pop up, or how to handle some of the behavioral issues that they might see as time progresses. So we offer caregiver education programs as well. Our programs are given across the country. So if you see one of those programs here, and you have a family member in California that's helping you with this caregiving, they can go online and they can watch that exact same program. So they're national programs. They're either evidence-based or evidence-supported, and they're really valuable learning opportunities.
Yeah, those are some really great programs that you have out there. And I think it's a problem that has touched most of us, but I think, people aren't aware of how big the problem is. And how many people it affects.
Absolutely. And I think, one of the big things, and one of the things that was so poignant for me on Tuesday at Advocacy Day, so there's usually a group of us and we split up and we go and talk to our individual representatives. And we had a family caregiver with us on Tuesday. And one of the things that he said that was so helpful for him that the association had provided for him was, his mom has dementia. And so he said that he is learning now how to deal with this new person in his life. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a huge part of this, is that we don't necessarily, we try to interact with this individual the same way we always have, right? And so I think that a lot of times sets up failure for everyone involved. So Erica, can you talk about some of the warning signs, so the top 10 warning signs that we have?
Yeah. Yep, absolutely.
And by the way, I read those top 10 signs and I feel like I have every one of them. So maybe you'll educate me to say I don't have them.
Right,
some
right,
of them
right.
are common to everyone and yes, some of
absolutely.
Them are specific.
And
absolutely. Just quickly, in case you guys are sitting there and going, I really want to call and ask this question, our number is 518-476-5900 or 1-800-WROW-590. Although I don't know what that translates into numbers, because sometimes I go to dial that and I'm like, I wish they'd just give me the numbers and not the letters.
Because you can't see the letters on your phone. That's probably why. So.
Yeah. So in terms of the 10 warning signs, I think, Jane, just like you're saying, we've all been there before. If you look at this list on any given day, you see a little reflection of yourself in there, and that's okay. What we want to stress is that these warning signs really represent kind of a pattern of an overall decline. So if these things happen, just once in a while, one here, one there, and it doesn't happen again, that's okay. there are a lot of things that can affect our kind of cognition and our just ability to function on a daily basis. If these signs represent really a pattern and you're seeing them happen more frequently, more often, a few more signs than you've seen in the past, then that would be time to really, you know, that red flag might go up there. But the first one is simply memory loss. So we know that with Alzheimer's disease, one of the very first signs that we see is short-term memory loss. People are often able to remember things from the long past, so those long-term memories, but forgetting things that they recently learned in the short term become really difficult. So this translates into a lot of different areas. If your loved one is saying, if you're asking you a question over and over and you're answering them, they can't remember that if they don't have short-term memory. Therefore, that answer just goes away and they ask again. So there's a lot of kind of implications there, but just memory, short-term memory loss. One of the really kind of big areas of misconception out there is that Alzheimer's disease is strictly a memory disorder, and it affects so many more things, which is why there's actually 10 warning signs and not just one. The next one is challenges in planning or solving problems. We see this a lot of times when people are working with numbers, say balancing a checkbook or a budget at work, things like that, where you actually have to plan and reconcile things. Those things become difficult. Following a set of directions, a recipe, things like that become more difficult. It's really, you know, normal for us to add a little sticky note here and there and kind of remind ourselves of things. If this becomes more frequent and you really see a pattern there, then that would be a problem.
So if you're looking at your parents' house and you're going over there, I think that's really good. One of the things you can check is to see their checkbook, if they'll let you look at that, their register, and look at the bills. Are the bills being paid on time, or does the register not make any sense? And that may be one sign, right, that you have to jump in.
Absolutely. Or are there, you know, months that go by and there's no entries at all? That really might be a warning sign. But, yep, very good. The third one is difficulty completing familiar tasks, whether this is at home or at work or just in your spare time. We had a family member that came to us and she said, you know, it really wasn't me who noticed these symptoms with my husband. It was his buddies who he's been playing golf with for the last 20 years every Friday. All of a sudden they noticed he couldn't really keep the score as well. He was taking his turn out of order. He was doing some uncharacteristic things, and they were the ones, the friends, who really brought it to the wife's attention. Again, things that you've been doing for a really long period of time all of a sudden start to become a little bit more difficult.
Although I have to say, one of the examples here is, you know, not knowing how to operate the TV. I can't do that without my son because we have so many remotes. But
But you know,
if it's more than that, right?
If it's more than that, and if your son would be nice enough to write you a little set of directions there, hopefully you can still follow those directions, whereas somebody that was really having that type of impairment would probably not be able to follow those series of steps.
That's a great idea.
Yeah. Cheat sheets for all of these techie things. Yeah. The fourth one is confusion with time or place. So it's, you know, it's pretty normal for us to kind of wake up, especially on a day like today, and say, wait a minute, is today Friday? What day is it? And then usually we remember later on. The difference there, you know, somebody that's got Alzheimer's disease or maybe is just kind of starting out with some type of cognitive impairment, if they don't remember now what day it is, they're probably not going to be able to problem solve and kind of rationalize their way back to that right answer. We also see them losing kind of chunks of time. So maybe not only forgetting which day it is, but also month, season, year, things like that.
That can also be like dressing inappropriately for the weather, right? Because they're not sure what season it is.
Right. So you look outside, you see it's sunny, and you think, oh, it's warm. And
that's right.
Like I keep thinking every day that I wake up and it's sunny outside and
it does
just
look warm
want it
out.
To be warm, right?
Yes.
Kim, are you going outside in your shorts and sandals? Because it's
not
sunny?
Not yet.
Pretty soon. The fifth one is kind of an interesting one. So it's trouble understanding visual images and spatial relationships. Mm. So when we think of Alzheimer's disease, we don't think of a problem with your eyes. And it's not true that when you have Alzheimer's disease, your eyes go bad all of a sudden. What does happen, though, is that your brain, because of the changes that are happening there from the Alzheimer's disease, start to misinterpret what your eyes are seeing. And where that really will come into play is depth perception. So, you know, your ability to accurately judge distances between objects. So if you're driving a car, stopping in time before you don't hit that car in front of you, stopping at a stop sign accurately when you're walking down a flight of stairs, really important for us to be able to accurately see the next step so we know how big of a step to take, things like that. So those things start to get, we start to see some safety concerns there as we see this particular decline in abilities. Color and contrast are other things, not being as easily able to pick up. For example, a white toilet that's got a white toilet seat that's on top of a white floor in a bathroom with white walls, really hard to do what you need to do in there because you may not see the toilet accurately with no color or contrast. So that's what we mean by this sign.
I actually have an interesting story. I used to work for the Alzheimer's Association. One of the families that I met with at one point, one of the constituent we were talking about, he was still driving. And one of the things that really alerted the family to there being an issue is he was driving his wife to an appointment at Albany Med, and they were on the Northway. And a car very far in front of them put their brakes on, and he immediately, because of that perception and because of that, you know, inability to really understand what was happening, he stopped in the middle of the Northway and caused a very huge accident. And I think we contributed to that spatial, like he just wasn't, you know, he saw the brake lights and he knew he had
to stop, but he just didn't know when.
Right, or maybe he didn't need to stop, but mm-hmm, his brain wasn't relaying to him that it was a car very far ahead. And, mm-hmm, you know, so it's one of those things that I think it's a very subtle sign that happens. But suddenly when you start putting those together, you think, oh my gosh, you know, some of the things, and I think it's one of the most dangerous ones that's out there. Because a lot of times we work with families and they are still driving. Last time you and I were on, Jay Marie, we talked about the driving thing, right?
And that was very popular.
Yes, it was. We got a lot of calls on that.
it's a difficult subject for adult children to broach with their parents.
It is, but right? It's certainly one of those things that when you, you know, even as aging occurs, but now you add a disease on top of it that actually skews how the brain is interpreting things, it really does become quite a serious and dangerous problem.
Absolutely.
And so before we go on to the next five, I just want to let you know about some seminars we have coming up in March, and we're going to talk about some of these issues about how you can plan as you get older to get your care at home. So we have a seminar on aging in place that is going to be on March 21st at 2 o'clock at the Glenn Sanders Mansion. And then we have another seminar in Kingston. That one is on wills versus trusts, where we'll explain what the difference is between the two. That is on Thursday, March 28th at 2 o'clock. And that is at the Courtyard by Marriott in Kingston. If you want to register for one of these seminars, you can call 518-465-7581 or go on our website and you can register there.
And so we have a whole bunch of coming up in April, too, right?
We do. But we have a whole bunch coming up in April. It's a little bit further away, but go on our website and you can see when the April ones are and certainly sign up for those as well.
Great.
All right, so what is the sixth sign of warning signs for Alzheimer's?
Okay, so the sixth warning sign is new problems with words in speaking or writing. So one of the things that we know, and we can relate to ourselves, if you're having a one-on-one conversation with somebody and somebody bursts in and kind of interrupts you, it might take you a minute to get back to where you were, in that conversation. On the other hand, for somebody that's having some real cognitive impairment issues, if that same scenario was to happen, they probably wouldn't be able to go back where they left off and rejoin that conversation. They may feel fearful to join the conversations to begin with because of some of these language problems that are popping up. They may want to just kind of step away and say, you know what, I'm not going to put myself out there. I don't want people to know right yet that I'm having some issues. Other things that caregivers might see, though, in this area, struggling with vocabulary, having a harder time finding the right word, maybe calling things by the wrong name, the shortening of sentences. So as we speak, you know, we tend to talk in 8, 10, 12 word sentences. We're going to see that kind of shrink right down there. And this kind of goes back to what we were saying before, those caregiver education programs. If you're starting to see some of these signs, really important to educate yourself as a caregiver on how to best communicate with your loved one that's got this condition, not only for yourself, but also for them, so they can understand you and you can make your comments understood by them as well. So,
right, those caregiver education are really important, as well as the support groups for you know, the children or the spouse, because, you know, it's changing the whole way you relate with that person.
Absolutely.
So,
absolutely.
Talking with other people who are going through it is going to be really helpful to understand some tips and tools you can
use. Right? Yep. And although, you know, everyone has been touched by this disease at this point in time, one way or another, if you haven't directly cared for somebody with Alzheimer's disease, there's a learning curve here. Mm-hmm. You need to learn about what to expect. You need to learn how to handle some of the challenges that are going to pop up. And that's just going to make you a better caregiver. It's going to make the quality of life better for the individual that you're serving to. So,
right. It's just good to know in advance so you can plan. And now we're kind of talking about planning about caregiving. In the second half, we'll talk a little bit about the legal steps you can put into place to start planning for this.
Yep.
So if you have any questions, please give us a call at 518-476-5900 or toll free at 1-800-WROW-590. Maybe you have a family member who's diagnosed with Alzheimer's, and just feel free to call in and ask us any questions.
Thanks. Great.
All right. So number seven, I think I do this all the time, misplacing things.
You may do half of this.
Okay.
So this warning sign is misplacing things and losing the ability to retrace our steps. So we see that one and we get panicky all of a sudden, because how many times?
I use my glasses all the time.
Glasses, car keys, remote controls, pens. Right. Pens is the big one. I don't know where they go, right? But the difference between somebody who doesn't have the impairment and someone who does is that we can go back and say, okay, I came in the house through the back door, dumped all my stuff on the counter before I hit the bathroom, and go back and retrace our steps, and there's the keys.
Right.
Somebody with Alzheimer's disease, not going to be able to go back through those problem-solving steps and, you know, correct that wrong there. So we do this all the time. The other thing that we see here with this one is putting things for safekeeping in an unusual spot.
I was just going to say that.
Yeah.
Some of the stories I've heard so much from our clients, you know, maybe putting keys in the refrigerator or the freezer or weird places like
that. Weird places, or, you know, sometimes it stems from some of the behavioral challenges that pop up, delusional thinking or paranoia, which might come to be later on, and they want to safeguard some things. Maybe it's their wallet or their pocketbook, and because of that, they take that item and they put that in the refrigerator or in their sock drawer or someplace. Doesn't make sense to us. At the moment, it made sense to them. The only problem is usually their short-term memory is faltering, and then they can't remember quite where they put it. So
that reminds me of a client I met with recently. We were at the assisted living, and she came to meet us, and she had to bring her purse with her. She didn't think it was safe to leave it in her room, and she actually sat with it on her lap, you know?
Yeah, yep. Something pretty common that we see.
Right. Trying to protect your stuff.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
So moving on to warning sign number eight, this one is about decreased or poor judgment. And I'm sure that you guys in the work that you do at Herzog see a lot of this. I was in direct care for many years. I saw this sign very, very frequently. So on a day-to-day basis, we have no cognitive impairment. Our judgment kicks in multiple times a day. Somebody calls us requesting information over the phone. They want our address and our social security number and our phone number and this, that, and the other thing. We don't give it because our judgment kicks in and says this may or may not be a scam. There's lots of those going around now. The IRS scam is heating up again.
Right. There's the computer tech help one.
There's the computer tech help one. Yep. I mean, they are endless. Again, you really need judgment to tell you there, okay, stop, you're not giving out this information. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, you know, when I worked at the assisted living facility, a few of my residents had come to me, and by the time they had gotten to me, they had really fallen victim to some very serious financial scams where they were $100,000, $125,000 in the hole because they gave money to somebody that they shouldn't have.
I've heard that too. We've seen that.
And many times. And unfortunately, I mean, that's one of the things that Debbie and I were talking about last week, is it just seems like we've actually had an influx of people that have been taken advantage of, particularly by their children. Mm-hmm. As of late, you know, which is such a terrible, I mean, it's bad enough that it happens, but then, you know, to be taken advantage of from the people that you trust the most is really, really hard, you know, to see.
Or by other people in their lives, you know, different caregivers, neighbors, you know, things like that. I've seen a couple times where, you know, the spouse dies and then the remaining spouse is kind of lonely.
Right.
And then they get preyed upon by someone who like kind of gives them a little attention and companionship. And then suddenly they're giving them the car.
Everything.
They're giving them their money. So that's poor judgment. And the children have to really be on the alert to look out for that.
Yeah, correct.
Absolutely.
That's right. We have time for one more and then we'll...
What I was going to say is, even before we finish this one out, the other side of this one is really poor judgment when it comes to taking care of yourself. So you mentioned Kim going outside because it's sunny out and wearing shorts or inappropriate clothing. That might be one thing in the area of judgment that That's we fair. See. We may have a person who actually steps outside. Mm-hmm. Again, judgment doesn't kick in and still thinks it's okay to wear those clothes. Mm-hmm. Not bathing themselves, not grooming themselves, you know, these things start to happen, not paying bills, not keeping their electricity on, all of those things for a variety of reasons. Certainly other warning signs are mixed in there, too, like problem solving ability and executive function, but definitely poor judgment in that area as well.
Yeah, that's true. And then to be aware of these things, you just have to kind of be constantly checking in, right, with your family member. And sometimes that's difficult if you don't live nearby. So you have to find other ways to do that. You know, sometimes a phone call isn't just going to be enough. So maybe finding someone, a friend or a neighbor, to go over and just check on them and say, how does the house look? What's going on?
Yep, absolutely.
Right. Because you want to see that everything is, you know, in place. You want to make sure that, you know, there isn't like a dent in the car, you know, that there is food in the refrigerator, you know, that they're making their meals and all that. And that even when we go to homes, that's something that you look for, right?
Absolutely. It's one of the first things that I'm looking. That's why I like to do the home visits. And I think what makes us so unique, because I do go out and try to see the environment. Because those are the telltale signs and really what we can see what's happening with somebody.
Yes, that's right. So when we come back, we're going to talk about the other warning signs. And then we're going to talk about some legal strategies you can do in advance to plan if you know that you're going to have this. And we'll be right back with the second half of the Herzog Law Firm's Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour right after this.
You've been listening to the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm. Join us every week to learn more about protecting the assets you've worked hard for, options available for Medicaid planning, and more. With offices located in Corporate Woods in Albany, West Harrison Street in Saratoga Springs, and Flatbush Road in Kingston, our attorneys are here to help you. If you'd like to schedule an appointment to speak with David, Jane Marie, Harry, or Debbie, please call us during normal business hours, Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. To contact us at our Albany office, call 518-465-7581. Our Saratoga Springs office at 518-581-8131. Or our Kingston office at 845-338-6405. Let the Herzog Law Firm help you navigate a plan that works for you and your family. Now back to the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm.
Welcome back. I'm Jane Marie Schaefer.
I'm Kim Hance, and we have a special guest with us from the Alzheimer's Association.
Hi.
I looked over at Erica and she's like, what am I supposed to do?
At that point, you give your name.
Hi. Yes, Erica Salameda from the Alzheimer's Association. Thank you for having me.
No worries. It's early in the morning still.
So Erica has joined us to talk about different things regarding Alzheimer's, about what kind of supports the Alzheimer's Association can give you. Things such as education, caregiver education, support groups. And as well, we've been talking as part of the education process as to what are the 10 signs, warning signs of Alzheimer's. And at first read, it looks like it's something that we could say most of us have. But as we talk more about it, you know, it's kind of a persistent problem. It's multiple of these warning signs, multiple signs that you have. That is the indication.
Yes. So shall we pick up where we left off?
Yeah, let's pick up with the next one.
Okay. So warning sign number 9 is withdrawing from work or social activities. So very early on in the process, a person might say, as I alluded to before, you know what, things aren't exactly coming out quite right. I can't remember everybody's name here. nothing, you know, something doesn't feel right to me 100%. So they may start to intentionally withdraw from those after work activities or going out with friends or maybe going to a family function or something like that on the weekend. After the early stage disease, it becomes more about a lack of ability to initiate an activity. So to do anything, we have to have a certain amount of get up and go, right? Mm-hmm. Certain amount of motivation. Early on in the disease process, a person will still have that, whereas later on, they won't be able to kind of self-initiate those activities. So that's warning sign number 9. And then the last one is changes in mood and personality. So I always say, you know, if you have to say, my loved one just is not acting like themselves, that right there might be a red flag. And I can tell you, after being in direct care for so many years, I've seen this really go both ways. I've seen people that were really kind of pleasant and easygoing go in the opposite direction. And I've seen those that maybe started out a bit ornery and cantankerous to kind of move in the opposite direction. So it's really kind of can go either way, but I always say, you know, if they're just not acting like themselves, that might be a warning sign. Another area where we see this pop up is when they have to change what they're doing spontaneously. So they're driving down the road and there's a detour or plans change suddenly. Sometimes those situations will bring out personality changes. The person might become anxious or more agitated and things like that. Because again, back to another warning sign, they have difficulty problem solving and fixing and correcting that situation. So that's the last one there, changes in mood and personality. And again, what I really want to hit home with these warning signs is this is not just about memory. Memory is number one on the list. There's 9 more warning signs here that really have nothing to do with memory. So we need to just be very mindful of that.
Yeah, that's important because some of us do experience some memory loss as we age, but that's not necessarily Alzheimer's. It's that plus all of these other different factors that make up the diagnosis.
I have a question. What's the difference between Alzheimer's disease and dementia?
Good question.
Because you hear them both and you just think they're not interchangeable, so there's got to be a big difference between one and the other.
Oh, that's a great question. Thank you for asking. So the difference between dementia and Alzheimer's disease is simply that dementia is really that umbrella term. Almost like cancer is an umbrella term. If somebody says to you, I have cancer, you're going to say, oh, I'm so sorry. What kind of cancer do you have? When we hear that word dementia, we need to be thinking along the same lines. So I have dementia. What kind of dementia do you have? Is it Alzheimer's type dementia, or is it another one of the dementias that's out there? And there's over 80 different types of dementia that are out there. So Alzheimer's disease just happens to be the most common form of dementia.
The reason why I asked that is because they just diagnosed Tom Seaver with dementia. Mm-hmm. So I automatically, as you're talking about it, and in that statement that they made, he was withdrawing from public life. So although he's going to work on his winery, so it kind of takes all of it into consideration, and that being, as you say, an umbrella, then what type does he have?
Mm-hmm. Yep, and we really encourage folks to get to a neurologist, get that full diagnostic process completed, so we can really tease out what we're looking at here. Is it Alzheimer's type? Is it a dementia that's coming from some other health condition that may be somewhat treatable in a sense? So we really want folks to get seen by their physicians.
Well, and I think this was one of the things that I noticed because when I was reading the article about that, it said that his dementia is related to a Lyme diagnosis. They felt like when you read, but that was actually one of the things that I was finding more and more common because it is one of those diseases that crosses the blood-brain barrier and can cause some cognitive issues, you know.
Yeah.
But so, to your point, getting that accurate diagnosis, I mean, that's one of the things that we were really stressing at Advocacy Day on Tuesday, because it is a disease that doesn't have a quote-unquote cure, mm-hmm. right? So a lot of times people don't feel like it's, you know, why should I go to the doctor? Why should I get a diagnosis? And we hear a lot of even primary care physicians that just say, well, there's really nothing you can do about it, so, you know.
That's kind of awful.
It is what it is, right. Sort of thing. So can you speak to a little bit about, even though there's no cure mm-hmm. for the disease, what are some things that can be done to help with the symptoms and those types of things?
Yeah. So just as Kim said, it was one of our big action items at Legislative Lobby Day, because we need people to get out there, talk to their physicians, seek that diagnosis. We're getting better in that area. We still find, though, that people aren't doing that early enough. So there's lots of benefits of an early and accurate diagnosis. Number one, the individual still has time to plan for themselves rather than having somebody else plan for them. So putting in place their legal and financial plans and having a say in who's going to handle the money, who's going to handle the healthcare decisions. We don't want those people to have questions when those time comes. So that's one area where it's helpful. Another area is access to clinical trials. The earlier you get diagnosed, the more access you have to clinical trials that are out there. And there's lots and lots of trials running currently, even locally, many things in the pipeline to someday end this disease. Early on, you have much more access to that. In fact, many of the drugs that we trial are appropriate for people in the early stage and only in the early stage. So we want folks to do that. Another reason why would be to get connected with care and support as soon as possible. I don't know how many families have come to me and said, you know, we're 6 or 7 years into this. Had I only known about the Alzheimer's Association 5 years ago, I would have called. I would have gone to an education program. I would have been attending a support group the whole time. I would have reached out to the resources. I would have been better prepared. So we want folks to get connected with our organization and, you know, a variety of organizations in the area as soon as possible to get that support. And we're not just saying that. There's a lot of studies that are out there, some very famous studies, in fact, that indicate that an educated and a supportive caregiver is able to care for their loved one almost 2 years longer at home than someone who is not educated and not supported and not connected to the appropriate resources. So we need people to do that.
That is a huge difference, because I know a common thing that caregivers experience is burnout from taking care of
absolutely
someone. And it can get exhausting as the disease progresses, which kind of leads me to a question about, I know there's a respite program that's available. Can you talk a little bit about what the respite program
is? Yeah. So, again, thanks to New York State and the funding that we get, we have several partners that we collaborate with across the area. Two of them are Eddy Alzheimer's Services and Catholic Charities. Mm-hmm. So we work very closely with them. We'll provide, you know, disease education to a family if it's looking like this family member really needs some respite. And what respite is a break for the family. They need a day. They need some time. They need a few hours here and there to take a break and have their loved one be supervised so they can go to doctor's appointments, get errands done, things like that. The Eddy does offer respite, Eddy Alzheimer's Services, and you can call our 800 number and we can connect you, or you can call Eddy Alzheimer's Services themselves and speak to them. The respite that they offer is through a variety of settings. So they offer some respite in day program settings. They do offer some in-home respite. And then they also have these wonderful volunteer programs. So these volunteer teams are teams of people, usually out of a faith community, that will be assigned to a person and visit them, take them out on outings, you know, do activities with them and kind of supervise them as part of the process. So many times when we're recommending to a family, you need to start looking into some services and getting yourself some help. It's not one-stop shopping. We really recommend that they're going to have to kind of piece things and piece resources together. And that's one great resource to use.
And can you give out that 800 number for the Alzheimer's Association?
Sure. It's 1-800-272-3900.
Thanks. Those are really some good resources. And can we see a lot of people using the respite program just
right
for a break from the day-to-day?
Yep.
Right?
And a lot of times, you know, one of the good things when you start planning early, and this is really where having a great, you know, legal plan, a lot of times people don't really understand what the need for that is. And, you know, this disease average is, you know, 4 to 8 years. Right, that mm-hmm. it goes. And so we've seen a lot of people who have gone much longer
yep.
than the 8 years. And having a plan in place, because while these respite services are great, they're respite. It's not meant for long term. It's not meant for the duration of the disease. So really putting an action plan in place and getting your documents in order. I mean, that's one mm-hmm. of the things right now I'm working with a client that Both of them are 96. They live at home, and the wife has only named her husband as power of attorney, and she's moderate stage Alzheimer's at this point, and we don't feel, well, A, she won't sign anything because she's very suspicious that everybody's trying to steal things from her. And B, if he should predecease her, which we feel like he probably will because his physical state is the way it is, there's no one named to take care of her. And being in the circumstance and situation is very hard and very challenging because we all know, what she would like, but putting in a plan in place is almost nearly impossible at this point. And once her husband passes away, really the only option for them is going to be guardianship. Because they just didn't have that conversation early on when they did their documents, 20 some years ago. And why it is so important to do that planning, and one of the things that we talk about is it allows you to stay in the driver's seat and stay in control of things so much longer if people just understand what it is, or you have people who can make decisions on your behalf, in the event that you're unable to do that.
I think legally speaking, advance directives is probably one of the most important thing you can do in this situation. And by advance directives, we mean a power of attorney and a healthcare proxy.
Right.
And we'll explain what they are, but I just want to remind everyone that you can call into the show with your questions. It's 518-476-5900 or toll-free 1-800-WROW-590. If you have a question about Alzheimer's disease, or if you have a question about advance directives, or just in general about trusts or Medicaid planning, give us a call and we can help you out. If you don't want to call in, you can go to our website, www.herzoglaw.com. You can email us or set up an appointment to ask your questions.
Absolutely.
So going back to the advance directives, they cover two different things. Power of attorney covers legal and financial, and healthcare proxy covers medical. But what they have in common in both of those, you're appointing someone to take care of these things when you are not able to anymore. So number one, it's important to do that while you're still able and you still have the capacity to make those decisions and make those choices. And then what Kim just brought up, it's important not just to appoint one person. It's important to appoint alternates or backups to that first person, because very often you may have to, have more than one person take care of things for you.
That's right.
And that's something that sometimes people have a hard time deciding is who to make as that backup person.
Okay, we have our first caller. We have Jimmy from Albany. I was about to say Jiminy.
Hi, Jimmy.
Hi. And I was concerned about me because I'm 62 years old, and I'm having problems. I got to see my doctor. I'm not sure if I have Alzheimer's, but I hope I don't, because it's a bad disease and I don't want to die from it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm scared. I'm nervous, and I don't know. I got to get help.
Yeah. Well, you're on the right track, Jimmy, because the first thing that we would recommend you to do is go see your doctor. And not only go see your doctor, but when you're there, tell your doctor, I am having memory problems. List out exactly the type of memory or cognitive concerns that you have, and make sure that he evaluates you for that. That's the best thing that you can do. So you're doing it.
Yes. I have memories and bad memories and dreams and that. And I'm not sure if I have it, but I got to see my doctor on the 19th. I want to talk to her about it.
That's a great thing. You're on the right path. Beforehand, one of the things that we always recommend is just so you can remember everything that's been going on, start making a list of all of the symptoms that you're seeing. So maybe it's problems with your memory or a bad dream here and there or other issues. Have that list ready for when you go and have that conversation with your doctor.
Thank you. I appreciate it, and thank you for your support.
Absolutely, Jimmy. And if you need anything else, please call the Alzheimer's Association for care and support. And our number, again, is 1-800-272-3900.
Yeah, that's a great question, and thanks for calling. And it is, really good to try and get a diagnosis as early as possible.
Absolutely.
And it's great that he's recognizing the symptoms and that he can, proactively go to his doctor and say, this is what I'm feeling, and I'm recognizing it. Because sometimes people don't recognize it, and maybe it's other family members who recognize it on their behalf.
Well, and the other thing is what I always say to people is, like, you know, again, to go back to that, well, there's really no cure or anything like that, but, you know, so often what I say to people, I mean, your brain is what operates your whole person, your whole body, right? And we have actually, we meet with people all the time that when they finally do venture into getting that, you know, researching what's going on with them, sometimes they found that it's not Alzheimer's and dementia at all, because there's so many things out there that kind of can mimic dementia, can mimic some type of memory loss. And a lot of times they are treatable. You know, we've people that have, you know, issues with thyroid, with different kinds of, you know, vitamin mineral deficiencies, a urinary tract infection. You know, sometimes even things like a brain tumor could cause, and these are treatable types of diagnoses that we can deal with. And let, you know, some of those left undiagnosed can actually turn into more serious and even fatal types of things as well. So it is so important to reach out and get that diagnosis.
Right. It's good not to leave these things, you know, untreated.
Right.
You know, it's good to address them early. So getting back to the advanced directives, so why it's so important to have a power of attorney or healthcare proxy is because what happens if you don't? So if you do not have a power of attorney or healthcare proxy, and then you become incapacitated such that you can't sign any more documents, the only way to have someone help you is to go to court and have a guardian appointed for you. And that is, when you're going to court, it's going to be timely. It's going to be expensive. You're not sure. Now you're not in control of who the court is going to appoint to take care of you. So that's really something you want to avoid at all costs. And if you're waiting and waiting, you're saying, oh, I don't need to right now, it can get to a point where, you know, as you mentioned, Kim, this person is not able to sign a document anymore to appoint someone.
Right.
So you do want to try and avoid that. While we're speaking about powers of attorneys and healthcare proxies, you can learn more about these at our seminars that we have coming up in March. We have a seminar on aging in place, which is how you can learn about planning to receive care at home. And that is on March 21st at 2 o'clock, and that's at the Glen Sanders Mansion in Scotia. And on March 28th, we have a seminar on wills versus trusts at 2 o'clock, and that is in Kingston at the Courtyard by Marriott. And you can call our office at 518-465-7581 to sign up for these seminars, or you can go onto our website at www.herzoglaw.com. So getting back to planning, it's important to kind of think ahead and plan. So some people have a trouble deciding who should be the person they appoint. Have you run into that, Kim, when you're out talking to people?
Well, all the time, and a lot of times, you know, I'll share my personal experience. When my husband and I went to do our plan about, I don't know, 7 or 8 years ago, when our daughter was young, you know, we're sitting around the table talking about the different scenarios, and in the event that an accident were to happen, what I would or wouldn't want. And I saw my husband get really squirrely at the table, and I thought, I finally like looked at him, I'm like, are you okay? And he was like, I don't think I can do this. I said, do what? But he really, his personal belief system and the way he personally feels about things, he said, I don't think that I could tell them to not resuscitate or to pull the plug in the event that it had to happen. And it never even dawned on me that he would not be my person, that he would not be the person that would be able to advocate for my choices. And so I very quickly had to kind of go back to the drawing board and say, who's somebody that I can trust that I know will follow through with my decisions and what I want for myself. And that's why I say, particularly with folks that have Alzheimer's and dementia, you really need to have these conversations with people so that they understand what you do want. And not even with a disease like Alzheimer's and dementia, it's just as we age.
Right.
People need to understand what your desires are, what your wishes are, so that if there's an incident of some sort, they can act on how you would want that decision to be made for you. So it is super important to, A, know who the people are, and then not even know who they are, but then talk to them about what your wishes are. Because, you know, nothing more than a conversation allows people to, you know, have the ability to act on your behalf. So that's why it's so super important.
We see that a lot, and sometimes you just assume, like you said, your husband or your child, and you appoint them, but then you don't share any information with them.
Right.
And then children come into us in that situation, and they're like, I don't know, financially speaking, for example.
Right.
I don't know what my mother has. I don't know what her bills are. I don't know where her bank accounts are. And now she has Alzheimer's, and I have to take over for her.
Right.
So it's all important about having these conversations ahead of time.
Absolutely. Well, we say like the minimum somebody needs to have for power of attorney, right, is the ability to have some financial capacity.
Because
a lot of times when parents are sitting, you know, or somebody's doing their documents, like, well, Susie's the oldest, she'll be power of attorney, right. and Johnny, well, he can be my healthcare proxy, you know.
Right.
And you really need to understand what the capacity of each of your, you know, the people that you're naming are, so that you're making the right choices. Because we've certainly seen where whether it's kids, friends, whatever, don't make the best decisions. And, you know, you really want to make sure that you've got that ability to have somebody making good, solid choices for you.
Right. So it's putting that plan into place. So now once you've kind of identified the people who are going to be helping you out, now you can go ahead, if you do have this diagnosis, and kind of thinking ahead about what your care plan would be.
Right.
You know, where would you want to receive care? What kind of help would you need? And Erica, that's something that the Alzheimer's Association has education and resources for, right? To kind of help you think about that.
Absolutely. Best thing that we can do for them is to sit down with them and have a care consultation and, you know, talk about the options. We call it options counseling. What are your options? Keeping in mind the wishes of their loved one and what is best for that person at all times. So we go through all of that and we help them, you know, set that up and get connected to the resources that they'll need going forward.
I know one of the most helpful programs, I think, that the Alzheimer's Association offers, particularly for folks who are in the early stages of the diagnosis, it's a program called EASE.
Yep.
So Early Alzheimer's Support and Education. Mm-hmm. And I know you guys have a couple of them
coming up
in the near future. And what's nice about that one is it's an 8-week class, and it covers everything from, you know, the diagnosis itself to navigating through legal and financial and medical. And so you want to talk a little bit about that?
Yeah. So incidentally, we just had one start in our office about 2 weeks ago. So we're only 2 weeks into this. We offer this throughout our territory that we cover a few times a year, probably about 4 times a year now. So if you're interested, you can give us a call and we can put you on the list for the next one. But just like Kim said, it's Early Alzheimer's Support and Education. It's an 8-week program, what we would consider partnered learning. So the person with the early stage diagnosis comes with their care partner. All of the educational material is geared towards the person with the disease, but we have the care partner there for the retention factor to help them kind of organize and retain everything that they've learned. And just like Kim said, it goes through everything you might need to know. So we start with an overview of Alzheimer's and dementia. We talk about partnering with your doctor and opportunities for research. We talk about legal and financial planning. We talk about communication challenges that will arise and strategies that the person with the diagnosis and the care partner can put into place, as well as just day-to-day strategies to help you kind of live your life better. We also talk about the emotional aspect for both parties. So obviously this is not a nice disease, if any of them are. And really, there's a lot of emotional kind of baggage that comes along with it. So we sort through some of that stuff. We talk about safety during week 7 and things that they need to put in place, including driving, and we broach the subject of wandering. And then the last week is about resources, getting them connected to resources in their community where they might want to seek out support from. The nice part about this program, so for the first hour and 15 minutes, we go through that educational component, and then we break off into two groups. So the people with the diagnosis are with others in their same kind of situation, and the care partners are together, and we spend some time just kind of working through the feelings of it all and supporting each other in those two different venues. So it's really a great program.
That's really nice support that you can offer to that person.
Yes.
Right.
Yep.
And in terms of planning for your care, it's the same for Alzheimer's patients as it is for all of our patients, that they want to receive care at home.
Right,
No one really wants to have to go into an institution. So working ahead, you can kind of think through that and plan for that.
Right.
You know, do I have financial resources to pay for care at home? If I don't, do I have long-term care insurance? And if I don't have that, well, Medicaid can pay for care at home, which is what we talk a lot about on this show. And you can plan for that in advance. You know, you can make sure that you qualify for the program, and through that program, you can get care at home so you can stay in your home.
Right. I mean, and that in particular is one of the things that we'll be talking about on our March 21st seminar, mm-hmm. The Aging in Place. That's really, we get very specific about all of the different community Medicaid programs, because there are a lot of them out there, and that's a big piece of what I do for the firm, is really help folks navigate through what programs are out there, what seems to be the most applicable mm-hmm. according to not just the circumstances that are going on, but just the geographics, the level of care that's needed, what the caregiver availability is. You know, if you guys have any questions about that, certainly call the office, but I would really encourage that Aging in Place seminar on the 21st at Glenn Sanders Mansion, because it's very in-depth. It's a deep dive, as we call, for kind of aging in place in our community. So
yeah, it's really great that New York State does have that program through its community Medicaid program,
right.
That is very generous in providing support, and that's supporting care for you at home. So it's really good to learn about that program and see if you can take advantage of that program.
Absolutely.
You guys are going to be talking about that at our upcoming caregivers conference too, right?
Oh, that's right.
If you can just quickly give the date for that.
I can quickly give it. It's April 17th, 2019, from 8 to 3:30 at the Albany Marriott. Mm-hmm. We'll have about 50 vendors there, a keynote and a closing speaker, and 10 workshops to pick from, including Herzog Law, who's going to be there talking about paying for care at home. So lots of great topics to pick from.
Yeah, there's a lot of great information. That's a full day program where you can get tons of information and go to different workshops during the day. And I would really advise that you look on the website and see if you want to sign up for that.
Yes, absolutely.
Right. Have you given all the way the caregiver books yet?
Almost.
I may have filling up.
Figured out a way to get a few more. So,
Thank you, Erica, for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for listening to the Herzog Law Firm Estate and Medicaid Planning Show, and we will be back with you next week.
Thank you for listening to the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm. For more information on their services, please visit herzoglaw.com. If you'd like to speak with one of their attorneys, please contact the Albany office at 518-465-7581, the Saratoga office at 518-581-8131, or their Kingston office at 845-338-6405.